Mini episode 1831 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode 1831. You have with you here today FDH managing partner Rick Morris, and we have on one of our favorite FDH Lounge dignitaries, my man Ben Chu from up in Portland here, generally on the show in his capacity as FDH hoops analyst, but there have been some other capacities where he's been on to a decent degree, sometimes breaking down some of the finer shows on television today with yours truly. And also, this is an ongoing little mini series within the show that we've had on the streaming services, the business of streaming. He and I are kind of nerds about the streaming business. We love to, you know, going through, hey, did you see what's happening with this? I wonder what's going to happen with that. Well, we're doing an entire other segment on the show today devoted to that, developments in the streaming business in May of 2025. And this was something that Ben flagged a couple of these in particular. So I want to thank you for that, Ben, and for being here today, my man.
Oh, of course. It's going to be an interesting episode.
It's going to be. And in particular, some of the bigger stories here, and this is going to be a relatively sports-oriented segment that we do. Sometimes we'll kind of go, you know, all over the map here, and we'll be talking about, you know, some of the more, you know, TV-esque aspects of this as far as quote-unquote TV shows that are on streaming or developments more so in that way. But most of the big things, most of the big headlines that you and I have been seeing, primarily you, this month have been on the sports side of things. And coincidentally or not, you have two different entities that were going to be part of the Venue streaming service, which fell apart. So ESPN going their own way with an app that is going to include, I believe, everything that the ESPN app has had previously. And I think it's lumping in ESPN Plus and all of that with, for the first time ever, the actual ESPN service itself from TV. And I'm going to go ahead and assume that you're probably also getting the deuce with that and any of the other over-the-air things. And they are very creatively naming that app, wait for it, ESPN. So your thoughts on this, Ben? I know the price point probably came in a little bit lower than what you were anticipating, maybe more so than myself, but you seem to be thinking in particular it might be a higher price point.
Yeah, and I mean, we still don't know the exact number, Rick, but I'm seeing, at least from the reports, it's between $24.99 and $39.99.
Okay.
Yeah, we're also going to be, one of the discussions too is obviously ESPN Bet's been a huge driver right now for a lot of traffic to the site. What are the additional things that they are going to potentially add to the app or to the sort of flagship app that they have? And it's not going to be the full Venue scenario, but it's going to be another opportunity for people who are, you know, either cord cutters or people who are spending a lot of money on YouTube TV or Hulu Live TV to have another option to watch sports and see the scenarios. But it's going to be very interesting overall to see how sort of this sort of movement, and they're obviously going to have original shows too, and maybe we'll see some things that ESPN maybe had wanted to do a little more often. I know they've been experimenting, obviously, during that college football national championship game with the multi-field cast. I know there's the timeline, too. They were working with Stephen A. Smith on his own sort of live talk show, sort of while watching the game, Stephen A.'s World. And it would not shock me if they add some additional sort of content to either the betting side or maybe with Erica Dolan, or it could be very interesting to see where they're trying to focus their money on. Are they trying to go after the sports fan, or are they trying to go after someone who just needs these channels to watch live sports to save some money at the end of the day?
Well, that's interesting, because then you start to get into the whole notion of can you be all things to all people? And it would seem like you'd have to prioritize what your audience would be. If you're going to be going after like a lot of the more hardcore gambling degenerates or people that are just, I'm guessing that the core sort of outreach is going to be towards people that are looking for the whole ESPN, if you will, multiverse kind of a thing. All things ESPN under one heading. My guess is that that's going to be the more fruitful way for them to go. As we'll get to with the Fox thing in a minute here, it differentiates in the sense that, and again, it's taken until 2025 for this to happen. We've been speculating on this show for like up to a decade once, you know, when are we going to get to the point and when is, you know, the business going to get to be more a la carte. And it was right about the beginning of the 2010s when I think it was HBO Go and when HBO started to put their thing out as a standalone. Showtime did the same. Everybody always knew that when it happened, ESPN would be one of the biggest dominoes to fall, if not the biggest domino, because now that the exclusivity is removed from cable, satellite, and the streaming services that provide cable, for lack of a better way of putting it, this is a different world once this thing launches.
Right, and it's going to be the real first breakaway, because I figured, at least for, I don't know the exact numbers, Rick, but I'd make the argument that I would say at least 40 to 60% of the individuals who get, you know, cable or Hulu live TV or YouTube TV are sports fans, because that's the only way you can really watch these broadcasts legally and still, you know, be able to watch the games you want to watch. And again, it's going to be a very interesting to see, because ESPN hasn't really prioritized this as much. I know they've been mainly focusing on just sports rights overall. So this is really their first opportunity to kind of be sort of like the forward-facing sports streaming service. I know Amazon Prime has been doing gaining rights, same thing with Peacock as well. Like, so it's going to really turn into like, if ESPN wants to brand this is the sports app that you need in your life, then it would be really interesting. If it just is sort of a way for them to get people who are cord cutters to buy into a service like this, they can totally use it, and it makes sense. But it's really going to be interesting to see where the priorities lie, because we've obviously had Fubo for a long time, but this is the first time we've had a individual sports company for, you know, that has rights is just focusing on their own app. So it's going to be very interesting to see
what
their plan out in the long term.
Yeah, it is going to be fascinating, and this is a thing too where somebody like me, my mind goes to this, and I don't know how many people out there where this will be the same, but for somebody that has had Peacock the last couple of years, and then prior to that, WWE Network, as far as I'm one of the people out there, and I know it's in the minority based on the numbers that have been shown, but back libraries, back catalogs of stuff, ability to watch old pay-per-views, ability to watch old TV shows, even from some of the old territories back in the day, that's the kind of thing that appeals to me. Now, I know that ESPN in recent years has phased out ESPN Classic, and that's not really a thing as much anymore, but the back library and anything that they have rights to that they could potentially put up there, that's something that will be of interest to me, and I wonder if that's something that they might use to try and grab people also too, because they've used, you know, the 30 for 30 thing quite successfully in a nostalgia kind of a way, because we forget, and some people don't even really remember at this point in time, how that name came to be. It was to celebrate the 30th anniversary of ESPN in 2009. They put Bill Simmons in charge of a documentary series. These have largely been documentaries from events from, you know, the 80s forward. And that appeals to a lot of nostalgia, whether it be Xers like myself, millennials like yourself. They're doing this in that form that appeals to nostalgia. I wonder if they're going to go further with this in terms of making actual, you know, back, you know, events themselves, games available to be watched on this new service. I will be looking to see if that's a part of this.
I mean, it would only logically make sense, because we've seen this too, especially with Prime Video, and acquiring some of the older rights to some of these sort of popular events that happened in the 60s, 70s, and 80s that mm-hmm. are just filler that you can easily just go in and think. But I would tend to believe not, because I would feel like that's sort of more of a niche aspect, Rick. But again, okay. It could definitely, one thing that we've always speculated, I've always speculated with all these league passes, like NBA league pass and Sunday ticket for the NFL, is at some point you also have to add additional content for viewers to watch and pay money for these things.
Yep.
And I think there's also the opportunity for ESPN to start paywalling some of these events that are sort of like, I would argue, mid-tier,
mm-hmm.
that they could make it exclusive this to get someone to buy into it. I think that's you know, always going to be the scenario at the end of the day. But we're going to see some ESPN exclusives. We're going to see some essentially some integration with ESPN Bet. We're going to see also stuff where you may be allowed to, you know, track your fantasy stats very similarly mm-hmm. too. So if you, so there'll be a way. And again, too, one of the big questions is, and I think with ESPN and now we'll get to Fox shortly, but the real question is that now we're starting to see the cable bundle start to be pricing out consumers.
Yep.
And for these sort of things like ESPN or Fox, and if you, I would make the argument, like currently as of today, like Hulu and YouTube TV are both over $75. Let's just make the argument. If you're an NFL fan, if you're telling me that I can buy ESPN for Monday Night Football and then a Fox streamer essentially to watch the NFL on Sunday, then and I also get Paramount Plus to watch CBS. Like, I got almost every major telecast right there. And it's probably going to be under $80.
So. Except theoretically, the biggest game of the week on Peacock. But sure, yeah. I mean, close enough, yeah.
And you throw in Peacock as well, too. So you still, I mean, that's going to be the argument. It's like, again, the pricing is going to be very similar. But ultimately, at the end of the day, it would not shock me because a lot of people, especially on the, and this has been one of the major complaints recently of the cord-cutting cable industry of Hulu and YouTube TV, is that the price increases have now gone to a point where financially it's not necessarily wise for someone who is only a fan of one or two things to be spending $70, $80 a month.
Yeah. And that's
full service, essentially.
There's going to be a lot of discussions in a lot of households in America in the time ahead here on what gets prioritized here vis-a-vis sporting events versus other things like that here. And part of that discussion, again, like you said, with Fox, with Venue falling apart, which was set to include ESPN offerings, although I think it was going to be their sporting events primarily. I don't know that it was going to be necessarily their entire catalog of programming, because ESPN had always intended to do a standalone app just for that.
That is correct.
But Venue was going to capture the sport, which, and this is going to be very interesting, because I'm sure there's a lot of people out there like me, even if the ratings don't show it. The ratings show that ever since, and when Mark Shapiro was there starting about 20 years ago, he's the one responsible for the devolution of the whole thing in terms of one tired hot takes factory here and all of the stupid debate shows and embrace debate and all the blubbering crap on the different shows. I still don't think that's going to draw nearly as many people as the sporting events themselves. I've been at the point for about 20 years now where I'm almost exclusively watching ESPN for the sporting events. You would have had that on Venue. You would have had the Fox Sports ones on Venue. Who knows if this Fox One app would have even come about were that not the case. And it would have been the stuff, the sporting events from Max, because WB was going to be part of this, the whole Warner Media thing, I guess you would say. So now Fox going their own way on this, and they did, I think it was Warner Media and Max that did end up subletting two of the first round college football playoff games from ESPN, because that was, I think ESPN was harboring a faint hope that there would still, that would still go forward as far as Venue. The out of court settlement ended that whole thing. And that was where I predicted at the time, these games are going to either Max or to / Warner Media or Fox. It ended up being the former. So Fox is left to do their own thing here. So in looking at this, they're going to peel off with their sporting events, which again, they've been putting for free on Tubi thus far. But those ones, although maybe not the ones on FS1 or anything like that, but at least the free games on Fox have always been on there. And I think some of the World Baseball Classic games, even if they've been on FS1, I think they've also been on Tubi, but no more. So a lot of the stuff is basically going to be getting harvested off of Tubi, put onto this new thing. Apparently Fox News is going to be a part of this as well. I don't really know how much crossover there is between the demographics here on these things, but I guess we're about to find out. So essentially all things Fox, which after the deal a couple of years ago with a lot of the assets going to Disney, even to this day, people kind of tend to forget that, you know, networks that were branded as part of the Fox family, FX and FXX, not a part anymore. Those are part of Disney. So they really kind of pared it down. I think 20th Century Fox Studios is no longer a part of that. They really kind of got it to just a handful of things here. You know, the Fox, you know, Broadcast Network, Fox Sports, Fox News, whatever other things there might be. I've seen something.
No, I've heard rumors it would probably include Fox Business as well.
Fox Business, great point. So,
and they're also, and again, obviously, too, there's going to be original content and anything else that they would decide to add to that.
Well, let me give a plug to one of the legends of that biz. Multiple time past lounge guest and former denizen of the North Coast, Liz Claman. You'll be able to see Liz Claman and her Fox Business coverage on this Fox One deal. And I saw a thing on Google News before where it also said, if this is worth anything to anybody, the local affiliates across the country as well, you could do that. So it's like if you're sitting there in Charlotte, North Carolina, for example, and you're just dying to see what's on the Salt Lake City news, you might be able to fire that up, Ben Chu. So they're throwing in these other things. I mean, that's the very definition of niche if you're throwing in all
the local. I mean, one of the things that's really interesting, at least when it was being, like, at least from when the report came out earlier today, that would be called Fox One.
Yeah.
One of the things that I think that was just pointed out, I think it was Lachlan Murdoch who essentially said, like, they're more focused on having this be a companion.
Yeah.
Like, this is not going to be its own standalone service, really. It's going to be more focused in on allowing people to purchase this on its own a la carte, but also it's more for, if you already have cable, you'll be able to have access to this app as well. So I, at least from what I read and from at least the sources that I have and what is being discussed, the things that make the most sense to me is they're going to push this as part of a bundle. And okay. I know they've also been commented there's going to be a lot of instances of them potentially doing these, like we saw essentially with Disney, Hulu, and Max essentially did their three prong bundle. It would not shock me. We see a scenario where it's Disney, Fox, and Turner, or it's going to be or Max, or it could be another scenario where maybe they're talking to Netflix, or maybe they're talking to Peacock. So it could be any sort of scenario where you could potentially, this could be part of a skinny bundle almost in a way, where you could get multiple streaming services for this for a lower cost.
Well, you might have maybe answered a question that I had based on something I read today, because I don't know if it was Murdoch or somebody else that was saying, well, this isn't intended to be to encourage cord cutting or anything like that. We're not, which is odd, because you don't hear ESPN saying that. ESPN at this point is kind of like, for years and years and years, the top execs were like, we're not really looking to undermine the whole cable bundle. And like right now, they're not saying it out loud, but they're not running from it either. They know what they're doing. For Fox to be disavowing that, okay, they're not Comcast, which also is a huge cable provider or whatever. Fox is not in the business of this directly, but what you said there, I'm wondering about this. Like, could I, as somebody who's a cable subscriber, you know, basically get this thing, not have to pay subscription fees and just key into it my cable subscription?
I mean, that could be part of it if you have cable, but this is all just rumors at this point.
That's okay, because that would make sense as far as being complimentary. Because if it's a thing where people who are subscribed to your services via their cable bundle can use it for, you know, an all in one place kind of deal.
It almost feels like what they're trying to be is the best. Is they're going to be very similar to ESPN. They're probably going to have a very similar price point.
Okay,
where this is part of something at the end of the day.
Okay,
this is it's. And again, I'm not really surprised that they're focusing on the bundle strategy, because right now that's the easiest way to get more subscribers
right
to their app, is to bundle this with other existing properties. And in a way, too, like we've already seen just across the board of all these places, you know, doing deals and making alignment. Because I think ultimately what we're all going to start to see is we're going to see a lot of these streaming services continue to increase in price. And these bundles are going to essentially keep a lot of this together at the end of the day.
Yeah, and for guys like me and you that are hugely into marketing the way that we are, it's always been an interesting thing to me that whenever there's the acquisition of an existing property, it's not branded with your core things here. So as far as it's always been awkward marketing wise that Fox owns Tubi. Like this, our cable thing or our streaming thing is Tubi. And like people are like, why did Fox name it that? Like, no, it's an existing thing that they acquired. Much the same as like if you were to go out in the street and start questioning people, I'm not sure Joe Bag of Donuts would necessarily know that YouTube is owned by Google. I mean, maybe he does, maybe he doesn't. You know, that's one of those things where when you acquire another property, it's not branded that way. So is that the only reason that you don't, because you already have Tubi that's there? I mean, you could do much the same thing by saying we now have Tubi Plus, of where you have these other things.
But the real question, and I think the reason why they're separating it out, Rick,
okay,
is I think they want to keep Tubi as that sort of
entity
or platform that is still going to be free no matter what.
Okay.
And I think what they're seeing is that there's an opportunity that you can have both scenarios.
Yeah.
And again, okay, and we both have discussed this. Fox had been the outside of Fox Nation, as we all know,
mm-hmm,
that streaming service. Fox is the only major entity right now that does not have a streamer at this time.
Right. Yeah. No pay streamer.
It kind of feels like at this point they're a little behind, but this is a way for them to catch up. And again, I don't know who they're going to bundle with. There are many opportunities for them to make some moves.
Yeah.
But I can see a scenario where we already have that three-prong bundle of Disney Plus, Hulu, and Max. Would not surprise me. You add another $19.99 onto that, you can get Fox as well.
Yeah. So
essentially, I think we might see sort of a mini arms race for all these streamers to try and get the best bundles possible. Because I think what we're all going to see, at least based on the economic timeline we're all currently under.
Right.
It's going to be more folks looking to save money.
I think so.
And I feel like, too, because I think on the average, and I've read studies about this too, like the average person right now is subscribed usually between 3 to 5 subscription streaming services or close enough within that range. So it feels like to me what's happening is that a lot of people are going to continuously, and we also saw too, like earlier in the week, early in the last week, Disney revealed their subscriber numbers for Disney Plus, and those took a big increase.
Mm-hmm.
So it would not shock me that Fox is using this as a way to keep Tubi on its own,
yeah,
but then also find ways to promote their core group. And again, I'm not going to rule out a scenario that there is a core group of Americans that just love Fox to death.
Yeah, there are.
Fan, like if you love Gordon Ramsay cooking shows, if you love, you know, some of the other programming that's associated with Fox News or Fox Business, or if you're just someone who really wants to watch the NFL on Sundays,
yeah,
can you rule it out? I mean, and again, too, the really interesting part now is that we are getting to the a la carte model. We're almost there now. The real question now is that is the hassle too much to just not stay with your existing streaming scenario?
Well, yeah. I mean, I got a couple thoughts based on what you just said there. One of them is that with Tubi, I've been seeing this in the last couple of months here, that this is like actually a thing of where it's gained this large, and I guess it would still, you would call it a large niche, but a large, you know, still whatever, it's decent sized, of people that just love it for all the random things that are on it. And that people will just use like this randomizer thing to like find something and watch something if they're bored. So Tubi exists with its large library of stuff where people are like, I never knew I wanted to see that, but I did see it and I loved it. Another thought is, based on the things you were saying about the different offerings here, that maybe we are a little bit closer to that crossover between Colin Cowherd and Jesse Watters that absolutely nobody ever asked for ever. Maybe that's what's going to happen. And my other thought is, based on what you said about 3 to 5 streamers, that's sort of the average for a lot of households. You know what I call people who subscribe to 3 to 5 streaming services? Lightweights. Can't you commit to something more than that, people? Come on, there's a lot of great content
and
out
I mean,
there.
The real question, too, and I think the reason why these entities are putting these out now is that they see an opportunity, very similar to, we saw this more prevalent with the MLB and the NBA with all the regional sports rights as an opportunity to take some of this money back officially and make it into real revenue for the organization instead of having to split off in terms of sharing a deal with a regional sports network or having to share this money with YouTube or Hulu at this period of time. So
right.
There's obviously opportunity still in the marketplace. And it's going to also turn into a very interesting area too, Rick, where, again, the one thing that Fox seems to be pushing right now is that this is more of a supplementary thing. This is not supposed to be its own sort of standalone scenario.
Yes.
But the question then is going to be asked, and I think it's a fair question, is who is the market? It's very similar to the ESPN one. Like, yes, we know it's for sports, but
yeah, what are you aiming for?
Like, who is the true market for just ESPN and the subsidiaries of the network?
Yeah, and that's where, and again, the bundling of Fox Sports and Fox News in particular, because those are two of the biggest entities here. Like you said, there's Gordon Ramsay, there's the stuff from the mothership too, the TV network. But I mean, by and large, Fox Sports, Fox News, and that's a thing where. And is there a large chunk of America where there's a big crossover? Yes, but we live in very polarized times, and there's a lot of passionate sports fans that are going to want no part of that bundle. And so that's going to be very fascinating to see, is if the crossover is anywhere near what they think it is, because I think it won't be. Because, oh, by the way, on any given point in time, when some of the more intellectually honest folks on Fox News are pointing out certain things about Trump, there are people on the right that don't like Fox News. So it's like this whole coalition between Fox Sports and Fox News is going to be very interesting.
Yeah, and one thing that I'm going to be really interested to see is, are they going to push? Because we saw with Tubi, they've been very hyper-focused on two sort of groups of people, which are the sci-fi fans and the young adult crowd.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be really interesting to see if they start pushing some of their ideas. Like, I know Amazon Prime Video has their own, and Peacock does too, their own little, like, mini incubators of creating these level of content. It's going to be very interesting to see if Fox does very similar things to try to draw people to that service. I know they're not saying that right now, but it feels like, to me, that's a selling point if you have a uniquely streaming show that is streaming only on this app.
Yep.
And it's going to be, this is just, it's kind of a weird arms race. Like, I don't feel like there's anything you really need to buy anymore, but it's just, we're going to, and again, we also have to put this out there too. And I think this is also something we also have to consider too. If Fox decides to talk to Prime Video at all, as we all know, like, they've had deals with a lot of popular smaller streaming services, stuff like BritBox, Crunchyroll for anime, Shudder for horror movies. If they put a deal together with Fox, that could be very interesting to see about potentially getting more of the NFL rights in-house where you could subscribe through Amazon Prime Video.
Yeah, because for example, of a couple of the names you rattled off there, I think as of right now, like Crunchyroll, that's something I still see on the Max app. But that's a thing where with the divestiture that may be coming with WB, where Warner Media, I keep saying WB from the old days, but yeah, like there's been talk about separating out Max from the TV assets and what, which I don't understand at all. I don't understand. Everybody's going the other way.
Question too, and I find this very interesting too, is that if Fox does a hypothetical deal with Prime to essentially get more of their content on that platform, and it allows Amazon to host that stuff. It's going to be a very interesting scenario. Again, I'm not projecting it to happen.
Yeah.
But we also have to consider that there are going to be deals coming up for Fox, whether it's with Max and Turner, if it's with Disney Plus and Hulu, if it's with Paramount, if it's with Peacock and NBC Universal and Comcast. There's a lot of interesting moves they can make here. And again, I think one of the big reasons why these entities are doing that, because they're bringing internal revenue in.
Right.
Because I think we all know the carriage, we've seen a lot of carriage disputes in the last year and a half. And I feel like a lot of these organizations are just going to start to pull back a little bit and say, look, we would rather create our own entity and get the direct money from these customers instead of having to pay on the dollar to these affiliates and pay on the dollar
right
these other scenarios with cable.
Yeah, they don't want to do that, no question about it. And as far as now, one of the entities that you didn't list there, which I think it doesn't make any sense for them to partner up with them in any kind of a way, although who knows going forward, would be an entity that I name checked a couple of minutes ago here, YouTube. And they have also been in the headlines for streaming recently here for something that would be one of the more significant sports oriented things that they've ever done. Of course, I think it was it 2 years ago, I think they started with covering the NFL Sunday Ticket and the offerings that way. But now expanding into an actual game broadcast, ostensibly they would have the Friday night game, the first weekend of the season, the one in Brazil. Looks like it's going to be Chiefs and Chargers. And that would be something where, again, akin to what Netflix is doing with the Christmas games, of where they basically create a sports division for one day. And it's the joke that I've made a lot of times about NBC with the Olympics, where they go to the Kelly Temp service and they hire out a bunch of NBC sports employees for 17 days. That's what Netflix ended up doing. They ended up subletting some talent from other existing networks. I'm sure YouTube will do the same. It does show you about the evolution of the industry that we've seen something like this before in terms of Yahoo. This was, I think, even late in the 2010s, I think as far back as that they were getting involved with the international games. And I think the NFL was being very careful, like, let's give them a Bills-Jaguars game that nobody would watch anyways at the time. So that's a situation where Yahoo, they're not even a part of these conversations anymore because of the way that they have basically sort of folded their tents on being that type of ambitious. But this type of ambition is something that we've been waiting to see for a long time from YouTube. And it's a thing where, on the one hand, when you talk about it and you talk about, you know, the biggest streaming services in the world, well, yeah, there's Netflix and there's this and that and whatever. But I mean, folks out there, much as I'd love to say folks are gravitating to content such as this one, realistically, it's the whole multiverse of multiverses of multiverses of all the things that are available on YouTube. And even if we're getting into like old bootleg content of stuff on there, like I've watched old bootlegged episodes of Guiding Light on YouTube. YouTube has everything. So they are this huge place that exists. Nobody will ever be bigger than them as far as eyeballs for the multiplicities upon multiplicities of things that are offered. But to actually be dealing more so in a standard sort of frame of reference for what a streaming service is, something like the Brazil game here, I had thought a long time ago that there would be a thing where, and again, like I said, I've been incorrect in the past in like forecasting that like streaming services would take away probably the biggest kahuna in American sports, which is the Sunday afternoon AFC and NFC packages. The networks have hung on to those at all costs because I think they see them as rightfully as part of their very survival. But I thought to myself, whether it was that, whether it was a prominent college football conference, whatever, that YouTube would be more involved in that way. And now it's not looking like they're going to be. They may be more kind of a niche player the way that Apple has been with the MSL and a little bit of MLB stuff, kind of like what Prime has been thus far, although Prime with the regular NFL games, that's at least been a little bit bigger. But they've been doing that as opposed to going after a huge NFL package or any type of significant college football participation. So YouTube is finally doing something on a small scale of what I thought a long time ago they'd be doing on a bigger scale. I don't know if it's really going to graduate beyond this or if this is maybe the trial balloon for maybe becoming a behemoth in the business going forward here. If so, that would be surprising because they've been very quiet in this line of business for years.
Right, and I think it's more, and I think the one thing I think you're mistaken too, Rick, is it is just from the streaming data alone, for Nielsen, they are the top video streamer.
Oh, yeah.
It's oh, yeah. Not even close at this level.
Oh, that's what I said. They're so much bigger than Netflix. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. At this point, too, it's like I think one of the biggest things with them, too, is that now they did the Sunday Ticket deal. Again, we can always discuss how valuable that really is to them in the long run based on the amount of money they play. But again, YouTube TV is still one of the highest numbers in terms of subscribers, in terms of paid live, you know, cord-cutting live TV. You have the entity, and I think the real reason why YouTube is continuing to pursue this, because they know that at the end of the day, the NFL is still one of the very unique sporting events out in the world.
Yeah.
And if you can hyper-focus people onto it, it'll be great. At least based on the, you know, it's, the deal's not officially done yet, but the things that we've seen come out is that they're going to make it available to be watched on YouTube and YouTube TV.
Yes.
So there's definitely opportunities for them to do a lot of cross promotion. I know as the, you know, as the hoops analyst for FDH, obviously they have that huge sponsorship with the NBA finals.
That's right.
So it's just right now for them, they are just heavily, heavily pushing to get out in front. And I feel like the smart thing to do is to continue have these sort of unique events. And YouTube, it used to be very, you know, we all grew up in the world of YouTube, E-bombs world and all those sort of things where it was more just creative content that we would go and see. And then we've seen the evolution over the last 15 to 20 years of YouTube being a home to watch streaming content.
Yep.
And seeing your favorite YouTubers or seeing your favorite and the big thing too, like we're not even talking or even discussing YouTube Premium being one of the biggest entities in terms of subscriber base.
Sure.
And we're seeing them also, one of the big pushes they've been making over the last 6 months has been podcasting. And yes, they're also among the leaders in hours listened to in podcasting. So it seems silly at the time that a lot of people were very speculative about why the hell would you buy YouTube
or right.
Google at this amount. Yeah. That valuation was just $2 billion. Now it's looking like, you know.
Yeah.
The Babe Ruth trade at this point, because at this yeah. point, YouTube is just cranking out money on top of money on top of money.
Yeah.
And it gives them opportunities very similar to what that Apple has and what Amazon Prime Video has,
yep.
is to acquire some of these rights and to make it a destination for people to watch. And it's going to be very interesting because a part of me knows what's going to happen, that they're going to put out a press release afterwards saying that this is going to be one of the most streamed sporting events of all time.
Yeah.
And it's going to definitely put a lot of, you know, it's going to be a lot of discussions. And again, too, like, we are also in a timeline, too. I know we're dealing with, you know, the NFL is going to be out of their rights in 2028. I know MLB is currently renegotiating mm-hmm. their scenario.
Yeah.
Let's not forget, too, that at some point, even though I know the NBA and the NHL have theirs locked down, again, there's always going to be out clauses in these scenarios. So I cannot be surprised if YouTube decides to splash some cash around,
yeah,
and go after unique events.
Absolutely. And that's where, again, so they're going to do this without any kind of subscription deal, of course, because that's going to get, at least, yeah, because that's going to get
for now. We do not know if that will change, but at least
yeah.
perceptually, it's the rumor is that YouTube TV will house the game.
Yeah.
But it will also be able to be streamed on YouTube. There is, at least sure. to me, Rick, a little confusion whether or not American users need YouTube TV to watch it. Been discussed that YouTube will broadcast it to the rest of the world.
Yeah.
But there's still no official word. But I would readily assume, too, Rick, that if you're paying this amount of money, you
yep.
would want the American rights on YouTube
yes.
as well.
Absolutely. And that's a thing where, and to the extent... Because again, you do get, and it's hard to say how much social media noise actually represents, you know, actual unrest among the American populace here. But this whole thing of like every time there's a significant pro or college game that's on Peacock, you know, like when if it's an Ohio State game, a Notre Dame game, an NFL game, an NFL playoff game, Peacock, the games that have been on Prime, all the grumbling that happens. This is a thing where, again, you would not hear, I think, even a fraction of that. There might be people complaining about a non-traditional kind of a thing, but given that most TVs in America right now are either smart or smart-enabled, mine ain't smart, but it's smart-enabled. I got a Roku stick on it. Just about everybody.
The argument, Rick, at this time, it's like 80-85% of America right now.
Maybe more than that.
TV or have something connected to their TV to make it a smart TV.
Yeah. I mean, you know, look, one of my... one of my fellow HOA board members who still has an old wooden console on the floor TV from the 70s. She won't be able to watch it on there, but I don't think she would have been watching an NFL game anyways. But most people, Ben Chu, most people are able to go.
Most people in America have either. And again, we've also, a point I know we haven't brought up yet on any of these episodes, but with the ability to get these bigger, smart-enabled flat-screen TVs easier now more than ever, you're going to have the ability for these streamers to get more reach now. Because if you're literally telling someone you have to turn on a TV and click to the specified app, nothing.
Yeah. I mean, so there's been basically that.
With smart TV prices going down, there's been a higher, I would say, especially with Roku, there's been a higher sort of, I want to say this correctly, there's been a higher growth level.
Sure.
People being able to access smart TVs at an effective price in where like 6 to 10 years ago, it wouldn't have made sense at all.
And again, most importantly for these purposes, it's been probably over a decade since you could even buy a TV that didn't have an HDMI outlet on it there, which if that's the case, if it's not a smart TV like mine, boom, you just put some kind of stick on it, whether it be Roku, whether it be any of the other ones out there, and that Fire Stick, whatever it ends up being. Yeah, so I mean, the amount of people that will be deprived of watching this is a fraction of the, you know, whenever anybody's complaining about Peacock or Prime or anybody else like that having big events. So you will have that as well. Nevertheless, it is a thing where, this is where sporting leagues get into the different things here where, again, even if this one is not going to be paywalled or unavailable to a good chunk of the population, it's still, you know, to a tiny, tiny extent, a bit more nichified as far as access because it's not on, you know, even cable or broadcast TV. But MLB, the path that they're going down right now, you had to flag this also too. The second season now starting with Roku, the Sunday leadoff that they are doing every Sunday with their MLB coverage and being involved in that. Of course, MLB also available on Apple TV Plus. They have that Friday night package, which has persisted the last couple of years. And so there is the access in different places here. But a big kahuna from this thing is going to be going away at the end of the year because, of course, TBS/Max, they're still going to have their regular season games and playoff games. Fox and FS1, they will still have their regular season games, playoffs, and World Series. MLB Network isn't going anywhere. But the games on ESPN, they've been whittled down over the years. I think now it's just down to Sunday Night Baseball, Home Run Derby, first round, the wild card round games that they have had. Those going away at the end of the year, and unless somebody blinks on either side, I mean, there's a non-zero chance that this gets put back together where Disney keeps MLB because it has been a decent part of their catalog over the years. And at a time of the year when they really, really need programming as well. I mean, you know, God help us if we're getting more, you know, Big 12, you know, women's softball games in place of MLB or something like that. But you could very well see that happening if they lose baseball. So where does that go? And does Roku expanding their offering on that seem like a possibility? You mentioned off air to me, possibly Peacock. They'd had the like late Sunday morning games. They would start them at like 11:30 on a Sunday. And I think one of the weeks they actually simulcast on NBC to go back to that whole kind of nostalgia thing, as I used the term before, because for folks like me that watched a lot of games on NBC over the years, there's a little bit of a chill seeing games still on there because it's been so long, but it could be that. I think you mentioned also to me Amazon Prime, which would have made more sense before some of the RSNs started going away because Amazon, it seems like, is sweeping up some of the remaining RSNs that are still out there, but there's not the level of synergy that there would have been otherwise. You're probably talking less than half the teams in baseball that might be under the Amazon Prime banner here. If there had been more of them, there would be more synergy between local games and national games, but it still might make sense for them to expand their offerings because the one commonality here on all of this and what I said before about the Sunday NFL games and that I've been wrong over a period of time that the big streamers were going to jump in and take the biggest, you know, pieces of American sports, the AFC and the NFC packages, is that It's this anomaly. Who's got more money than Google, than Apple, than Bezos here with Amazon and everything else? And they've been relatively restrained in what they've put it towards thus far. Now, it wouldn't take a whole big chunk of that money that they have to go out there and take those MLB rights that ESPN has had. But that's the thing where, too, you wonder if it's a situation where, if they're worried about a little bit of the, sort of Howard Stern effect or MLS effect, because everybody always talks about when Howard Stern left terrestrial radio to go to satellite, it wasn't as much water cooler stuff anymore. I would also argue it went with him kind of watering down his show and becoming more of an old guy on his show. But that's another thing here. But MLS, the visibility of it, even with Messi coming to Miami, is a fraction of what it was before it went to the Apple TV Plus paywall. And MLB is already a sport that has been devolving into that same silo that it breaks my heart to say hockey has been in forever. It breaks my heart for both of these sports. Do you risk taking big money from one of these more limited eyeball entities to take the ESPN package and put it there? Or do you hold out for some kind of a middle ground where you're still making a bunch of money, as much or more than you were making from ESPN, but the visibility is more, if they could somehow work that straddle? That will be fascinating to see as the streaming business evolves, because, I mean, it's not the NBA, it's not the NFL, it's not college football, but it's not too many rungs down the ladder from that. No.
And we've also seen, too, Rick, MLB recently have a pretty sizable increase in television ratings.
Sure.
And just fans attending the games now. And then obviously we're in the timeline too where the A's are moving to Vegas. Expansions talks are going to get restarted again. And it's going to be really interesting to see, because ESPN to me is probably more going to get some form of a smaller package, and then they'll be able to push some of these other games to, let's say, Prime. Or, Apple TV could always acquire more, and YouTube could acquire more, too. Mm-hmm. So, again, we're seeing, and again, we've seen the complaints over the last 5 to 8 years of exclusive content, and it's just going to continue, because right now, as I know there's a lot of people that would hate to say this, but live sports still essentially delivers and drives the viewership numbers for a lot of these things at the end of the day. There are very few shows in today's society that drive numbers like the NFL and the NBA and the NHL and Major League Baseball.
Yeah, and there's another thing, too, where, sort of half-joked about this over a period of time. The years when the NHL wasn't on ESPN, so that period of, what was it, about 16 years or however long it was when it was exclusive to I think it was, Versus and then the Outdoor Sports Network, whatever, but then also NBC, and then NBC taking that thing over, making it NBCSN, and then shuttering it all together. An odd tale as far as how all of that went. But anyways, when they had exclusivity on the NHL, it was a thing where I remember a period of time when ESPN tried to convince everybody in the spring that the AFL was bigger, and they were giving substantially more coverage to arena football because they had it. And this whole thing, like I said, I'm only half joking when I call them a protection racket, because it's like, sure would hate to see anything happen to your sport. Yes, they would bury the NHL stuff. It would be well into any edition of SportsCenter, like late into an edition of SportsCenter, even late in the playoffs. And I think Barry Melrose might have been the only explicitly hockey guy that they actually employed all those years. I mean, they really whittled that thing down. So when they're not covering you, That affects your placement in society. Hockey had already been trending in the direction of becoming siloed, becoming a niche, and not being a part of ESPN. That was part of the reason I think they came crawling back to them in the end, was like, please take your foot off our necks. So if you're MLB and you're already trending in that direction towards becoming a nicheified, siloed kind of a thing, can you really afford to spit in the face of ESPN? And I hate to say this, because I don't think anybody should have to pay the protection money, so to speak, figuratively here. But that has to be a consideration, because what your placement is on ESPN, it says something to a lot of the sheep out there in America as far as what your placement is.
Right, and I think there's a way that you can kind of satisfy all parties, because I don't think you want to completely shut the door down on ESPN, especially when they're creating their own individualized app. You don't want negative scenarios regarding that. But again, too, I mean, the real question ultimately for the MLB is that we are trending more towards streaming. We are trending more towards people using streamers to watch live sports more than ever before. And I feel like you want to try and make an assessment or just some sort of like deal that you can still be on ESPN, but this part of the package gets pushed towards one of the higher streamers who can give you that sort of, again, viewership. It's very interesting. And I'll be honest with you, it's very hard to tell, Rick, honestly.
Sure.
Because we have the Nielsen ratings, but this is just literally the tip of the iceberg. These have not really existed past 2020. So all this data, all this analysis, it's just still very early. So we really can't tell. But if I'm MLB, I want to make sure I'm still relevant in American society. But I also, at the same point, too, do not want to shut off the streaming engine right now and not find a way to get more money from whether it's a YouTube or a Prime or Apple TV Plus to potentially grow the game and get more money. Because at the end of the day, I think we all know when we start trending more towards when Gen Z and Gen A are going to be most of Americans, it's going to be a different world. And I feel like we saw this before within the, I'm trying to think of the most logical scenarios. Like, we saw this with the NHL in the mid early 2000s onward. We saw this in the NFL late in the 90s going into the early 2000s before the Brady Super Bowl win, where it just wasn't as big as other sports. And you want to still make sure you're still relevant to people.
Right.
And again, this is the argument the NHL made to essentially do their existing deal is that you want to make sure you're on platforms where people can find you and you have that name recognition. But it feels like, in all honesty, at this point, the one thing that I would focus on if I'm MLB is like, I want to make sure that I have a partnership, whether it's with ESPN or it's with these other entities, to increase our viewership, whether it's on social, whether it's on streaming, just to make sure that having the ability for multiple different groups of people to watch these games is superly important to growing a sport in America, at least at this point. We've seen some of these smaller sports that were less relevant, like pickleball and, you know, like we bring up sort of like, you know, these sort of like weird sports that we always saw in ESPN and HBO chill of like cornhole and all these other sort of events that these things still do exist at the end of the day. And people are going to want to watch content and you're going to have to make sure you stay relevant. Like, I'm not saying you have to crawl back and grovel to ESPN, but you also want to make sure, like you noted in your arguments, like you don't want to become irrelevant entirely to a large group of people.
That's what can happen. And to circle all the way back around here to what we were saying about the new ESPN app early on and the standalone here, maybe this is a thing where, again, when you were talking about the huge integration of ESPN Bet and everything that they're going to be doing. So you look at the times of the year when ESPN is the most vulnerable, and obviously that would be end of especially the NBA playoffs, but to some degree also the Stanley Cup playoffs, to, I would say, the beginning of, you know, training camp. You're going to get at least the degenerates betting on football in August. You get all the other people start betting in September again. Is that the integration, that's a part of the calendar there. That's about, however you look at it, and whatever the August exhibition season betting numbers are, which I don't know. But, I mean, you're looking at a 1 to 2 month period during the year where ESPN Bet is just going to, you know, fall right in the crapper, it would seem like, if you don't have. Now, they're going to cover baseball regardless. But, again, as far as putting emphasis into it and having the supplemental
coverage. Well, the key coverage, also, too, would be the integration, at least.
The integration and the supplemental coverage, yes. Like, if you're having games, if you're having reasons to talk about it, that drives people to your virtual casino versus if it's like, if it just exists there as something for a month or two out of the year, you're going to be less likely to generate the money in your little casino than you would be otherwise. So that might augur for me. And that's my prediction, I think, also, too. A stripped down package that they keep, ESPN sells off the other things here. But again, I mean, if you're putting home run derby,
I think the logical play here is to keep Sunday Night Baseball on ESPN, still have that flagship.
Yeah.
And then you sublet these other games, whether they go to Prime, whether they go to Apple, or whether they go to YouTube.
Now, if they
want to opportunity,
the home run derby.
It feels like it's the right move. It's the best of both worlds.
Yeah. So. Letting go of the home run derby, I don't know how much sense that makes. I could see them letting go of the wild card games. I don't know how big of a draw that is in the fall. And it's awkward when it gets to the weekend because you got all the college football inventory. So right, it's a tough balance with that anyways. But a lot of huge developments here happening in the streaming biz. And this has been one of my favorite things with this show, is to be able to circle back to this every so often with you and take a look at this on how this business, which is one of the defining business stories of our lifetime, how this continues to unfold. So always a pleasure breaking this down with you, my man. Thank you so much for being here today.
No, I appreciate it, Rick.
Really appreciate having you here, Ben. And thank you, everybody, for checking out FDH Lounge mini episode 1831.